Sounds True presents Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, Session 5, The Avatar Mantras, Part 1.
Even though we know that our nature is essentially divine, we forget. We forget both individually and as a species. After all, we have things to do. We have our lives to live with its various tasks and responsibilities, whether it's jobs or raising children or running a government or running an organization. We have things to do, and these things occupy our mind. And over time, we tend to forget that we are essentially divine. And when this happens, most compassionately, we get divine help. The most notable has been what are called the avatars of Vishnu. The avatars of Vishnu are divine beings that come in human body and have helped us for thousands of years. And over this portion of the course, we'll talk about those avatars and some mantras that will help us solve a variety of problems that we face in everyday life, both spiritually and materially. Avatar means one who descends from above. This implies that they have no karma like the rest of us. The saying is, they come with clean hands. They come with no karma. They come with gifts to give. They come with divine authority and grace to help us get where they are. So if an avatar is one who descends from above, what kind of above are we talking about? There is a saying in Sanskrit. This is Narayana again, who says, Sambhavami yuge yuge. The meaning is, for the protection of the pious, to move along the evolution of the species, to protect it from evil, I myself will take embodiment and come and help humanity in various ways. And this is the spirit of the avatar, again in terms of Narayana, who bodies himself forth, this time not as Brahma, but as Vishnu, to come to serve, to preserve, to quicken the spirit and bail us out when we get in trouble. There are more than half a dozen different kinds of avatars that come. Really, we're only concerned with three of them. One is the Maha Avatar. And this is one who gives a completely new interpretation to the scriptures and whose message is universal. An example of this would be the Buddha, who came and reinterpreted some of the scriptures and brought an entirely new teaching. There are 10 major avatars of Vishnu. 9 of them have already come, and 1 is yet to come. And of the 9 that have come, the first 4 were not human. Now let's talk about that for a moment. The first is called the Fish Avatar. And it is written that in an ancient time there was a deluge, similar to the deluge of Noah, and the known civilization of the earth was threatened, and a giant fish came and saved humanity at that time. Then thousands of years later, there was the tortoise avatar, where an entire continent was in trouble, and the Kurma avatara saved the continent. There may be some tie-in here with the tectonic history of India, because if you look at some of the geological progression that are computerized and animated, you'll see that India moved up and slammed into the southern part of Asia, creating the Himalayan mountains. So that in a mythological sense, the tortoise avatar of Vishnu saved the subcontinent of India, where future avatars were going to be born and bring teachings. The third avatar was called the Boar Avatar, and this is said to be a being that dived deep to secure a place for land to be anchored as other continents shifted around the globe. We have no evidence to indicate exactly what this activity was, only that there was a divine boar that saved us when another crisis of a geologic nature threatened civilization. With the fourth avatar, Narasimha, we have the appearance of a being in at least a semi-human body. And here we have Narayana as a conscious entity, much more closely involved. And here is the setup. Narayana is in his realm. Brahma has sprung from his navel lotus. The universe has been created and is ongoing, and Narayana is watching it. And he creates two small guards called Jaya and Vijaya, his attendants. Now, the sages in creation know that Narayana has great power. So when a huge crisis threatens, they sit in meditation and make contact with their own divine self. And in their divine mind, they make contact with that realm where Narayana is, and they go to Narayana, and they seek to speak to him about the problem that is besetting Earth and her inhabitants. But Narayana is taking a nap. He has said to his assistants, Jaya and Vijaya, "I feel like I need to take a little snooze, so kindly guard me from being awakened by extraneous matters, and let me take a nap." So saying, he dozes off. Jaya and Vijaya stand guard. Now here come the sages, the Brahmarishis, and they say to Jaya and Vijaya, "We have to speak to Narayana. There is an urgent crisis that demands his attention." And Jaya and Vijaya say, "Well, I'm sorry, O learned gentlemen. I cannot wake Narayana. He is sleeping now and has requested that we leave him undisturbed for a period of time." Sages say, don't you understand that this matter is much more important than some nap? You know, we have to awaken him immediately." "I'm sorry, we may not do that." "If you do not, we will curse you where you stand." Now, these Brahma Rishis are so upset with the crisis and their inability to solve it that they stand ready to use their divine power to move these fellows aside. And Jaya and Vijaya stand firm and say, "We will obey what Narayana has asked." So the rishis say, "Well then, let it be on your head." And upraising a hand, they chant a Sanskrit mantra and depart. They had been gone only a short period of time when Narayana awakes and says, "Well, that was wonderful. Any news for me?" Whereupon Jaya and Vijaya say, "Well, there was a terrible crisis on Earth, and some Brahma Rishis came. They demanded to see you. We followed your command and would not allow them to wake you. But they were upset, and they uttered a curse. What shall we do?" Narayana says, "The nature of the curse was that you be separated from me. Now, I've created this universe, and it runs according to certain laws. And I can't change the laws of the universe. That wouldn't be right. But I can alter them. So I will alter the curse in this way. You can be born 100 lives on Earth of divine parents and have a wonderful life. Or you can be born 3 lives as demons and then return to me." Jaya and Vijaya, without hesitating, said, "Well, we'll take the 3 lives. We'll be born as demons, and that way we don't have to wait 100 lives to come back to you. We can back in just 3. Narayana said, "So be it," and smiled. Of course, Narayana knew all about the crisis on Earth. He knew that the Brahma Rishis would be unable to solve the crisis. And being the one from which this entire cosmos has sprung, he knew that they would eventually come to him seeking solution of the problem. So after dealing with the Rishi's curse and changing it to 3 incarnations on Earth, with a mere projection of his thought, he solved the problem that the divine rishis had brought and set his plan now into motion. Jaya and Vijaya were now born on Earth in their first incarnations as demons, Hiranyakashipu and his younger brother. Now Hiranyakashipu, he was terrible. He defeated everyone. After he had defeated rishis, celestials, and sages, he took a wife and married. The celestials, in the meantime, were taken to the forests and disguised as hermits. Soon Hiranyakeshipu's wife became pregnant with a child. The child was born a boy, and they named it Prahalad. What they didn't know is that in the heart of the child, the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya was turning over and over and over again. So as the child grew, they naturally sent it to school. And as the young child studied, he was apparently learning the lessons that his father had wanted him to learn about how to conquer various people, what weapons to use, how to subjugate this group of people, and how to subjugate that group of people. So after several years in school, Hiranyakeshipu had Prahalad brought before him and said, "Well, now, what have you learned?" Now Hiranyakeshipu was a terrible demon, red eyes, full of anger, ready to brim out at any second. So when his child Prahalad was brought before him, he expected to hear the lessons of conquest. And so he said, "Dear son, recite that which is most important from all your studies leading to this time." Prahalad went to his father, bowed before him, and spoke. "I will recite to you now the most important thing I have learned thus far. I bow before the goal of all beings, the cause of all causes, Narayana, who is without beginning, middle, nor end. He who creates the world as Brahma, saves the world as Vishnu, and destroys and spiritualizes it again as Shiva. To him who neither waxes nor wanes, to that eternal one, I bow again and again." Now to say that Hiranyakeshipu was furious would be to understate the state of his rage. With red eyes and trembling demeanor, he spit forth, "Wretch! What unfit lesson is this, full of contempt for me, who have dominion over all? Know you not that I have the boon of Brahma himself?" And in fact he did, and here's how it happened. Vishnu had come secretly as a warrior and dispatched Hiranyakeshipu's brother, taken him from him. And Hiranyakeshipu, in anger at Vishnu, had decided he would take a discipline that would give him the most possible power so that he could ultimately defeat Vishnu himself. And he went into the forest and performed austere penance and spiritual disciplines. And it became so intense that a scorching flame emerged from the top of his head and began to scorch the known universe. The celestials at that time were concerned and went to Brahma to solve the problem of the scorch coming from Hiranyakeshipu. Of course, he knew all about it, and when they arrived, he said, "Hello, warm today, isn't it?" Well, they told him the problem, and he said, I'll take care of it. And he went to Hiranyakeshipu, and he said, "Your discipline is wonderful. Ask me a favor, and I shall grant it." Without hesitating, Hiranyakeshipu gave thanks to Brahma, whom he called Grandfather, and said, "O Lord, O Grandfather, let me never be killed by the following means: the striking and throwing of weapons by my enemies, thunderbolts, dried tree trunks, high mountains, by water, by fire. Let me be freed from the threat of death, even from the celestials. But why go on?" And then, of course, he did go on. "Let me never be slain in the indoors or in outdoors, or during the day, or at night, nor by man, nor by beast. Let this be." Brahma said, "I am pleased. You shall have this. For the next 96,000 years, your desires will be fully satisfied, and you shall have complete sovereignty." And with that, he departed. So this was the blessing of Brahma that he gave to Prahalad's father, Hiranyakeshipu. And when Hiranyakeshipu heard his son praising Narayana, instead of himself, who could not be defeated by any means, he was enraged. He sent him out to be instructed again. Prahalad returned with the same kinds of praise of Vishnu. Finally, being a demon, Hiranyakeshipu determined that his own son should be killed. He said, "Let this evil boy be killed. He's become a burning coal within his own family. There is no point into his living further." So he commanded the servants to kill him with their weapons. And as he did, young Prahalad spoke and said, "The Supreme One dwells in all weapons, in yourselves and in me. And because this is true, your weapons will not strike me." And as they tried to kill him, they could not. Well, it's a long story. They tried to kill him by half a dozen different means. By snake bite, through poison, by magic, through burning in a fire, by holding him underwater so he would drown. But each time Prahalad was perfectly safe. Finally, Hiranyakeshipu commanded the court magicians to combine their sorcery and dispatch the young Prahalad. When they did so, young Prahalad said, "Your works cannot harm me. The Supreme is in us all." And the magic returned to the magicians, and they themselves were reduced to ashes. Now Prahalad, being a divine soul, fell to his knees and poured forth from his heart, "Narayana, Narayana, save them, O Infinite One. If it be true that you pervade the world and protect, if you are the indweller and all-pervader, and since I think of my enemies even while concentrating on you, because there is no separation among us all, then let them live. I bear no ill will towards those who have tried to burn me, poison me, trample me, or spear me." And at these words and by Prahalad's touch, the magicians rose and with joined palms addressed him with respect. "Dear child, may you live a long and unobstructed life. May you be full of strength and vigor, and may you attain all the four ends of human life." And they left. The prayers of young Prahalad did not stop there. He prayed that his father be converted to loving him, even though his father had tried to kill him. And by the power of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, his father underwent a change, and even though he was still a demon, he was now kindly disposed towards his son. But the karma that he had created, his evil deeds of subduing the world as a demon, had to be balanced. And in another realm, the great balancing for those sins began with the creation of the mantra, Om Kshraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Om Kshraum Narasimhaya Namaha. And a being came into existence that had the combined body of a man and a lion. And this was the fourth avatar of Vishnu, called Narasimha. Narasimha. Long talons, long snout, fierce sharp teeth. Narasimha appeared in the town square where Hiranyakeshipu was celebrating his dominion over the realms of the earth. He killed some of the attendants of Hiranyakeshipu and then disappeared. Hiranyakeshipu returned home, and there he saw this being waiting for him, this fellow hairy in the extreme with long talons, with mane and fangs. He was not concerned. He had the blessings of Brahma, and he could not be defeated. However, speaking directly to him, the man-lion proclaimed, "You will not escape from this encounter. Even though you have repented and now greet your son warmly, your many sins must be balanced. My appearance and your death at my hands will clean the slate for your next incarnation. Three such incarnations, and you will return to the bosom of him whom you serve and adore, but have forgotten." Hiranyakeshipu said, "I see the head of a lion, but the brain of a bat. I cannot be defeated. Let's do it." And so they began a huge battle. But Narasimha, tiring of the exchange, picked him up and strode to the entrance of the castle of Hiranyakeshipu and said, "Your boon from Brahma is that you may not be killed, neither inside nor outside. Observe, we are on the threshold of your castle. We are neither inside nor outside. The sun was just setting at that time, and he said, Observe how now it is twilight. It is neither the day nor the night. Your boon is you could not be killed neither inside nor outside, neither the day nor the night. But it is neither of these things. Finally, your boon was that you could not be killed by man nor beast. You can see, I am neither of these things, but a combination of both. And so saying, he killed demon Hiranyakeshipu on the spot, and Prahlad assumed the kingdom where he ruled with compassion for the rest of his life. So this is one of the demonic incarnations of Jaya and Vijaya from that great being Narayana, who came and bodied himself forth as Narasimha, the avatar that defeats the seemingly indestructible. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Well, that's a grand story, but how does it apply to our daily life? I have a friend named Kay, and about a year ago, she was besieged by some terrible neighbors on one side of her house. Constant loud parties till 3 a.m, cars coming and going all time of the day and night, loud music blasting seemingly 24 hours a day. She got no peace at all. So she called me and said, What can I do to relieve myself of this condition? I've tried asking them. I've knocked on their door. I have spoken with them in the most kindly way that I can, all to no avail. What can I do? So I gave her a Narasimha mantra. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Now Kay took to this mantra just as one knows when one is eating good food. And she began to do it as she was vacuuming the house, as she was getting ready for bed, sometimes even drifting off to sleep, the mantra would be turning in her again and again. But she also dedicated one period of time every day where she would sit quietly and with her mala, with her rosary, she would chant it using her prayer beads. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha, Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. And after 2 months of this activity, her noisy neighbors sold their house, moved away, and the people who bought the house were quiet and friendly. So this is a mantra that you may use when other means don't seem to work. Try Kshaum Narasimhaya Namaha and solve the problem, invoking the energy of Narayana in the form of the man-lion god who defeats the seemingly indestructible. Now, among the words in the mantra, Kshraum may sound a bit unwieldy. It's K-S-H-R-A-U-M, Kshraum. Now, Kshraum is a new seed sound. It's one we have not discussed before. And Kshraum is the seed sound for making visible that which was hidden, and for bringing into power that which was in potential, but not kinetic. So it is the seed sound of Narasimha. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. Narasimha is the entity. Namaha means I salute. So the rough meaning of the mantra is, I take that energy which destroys the seemingly indestructible, and I make it manifest, and I salute it. Om Shraum Narasimhaya Namaha. There's another mantra contained in this story. Remember the 12-syllabled mantra? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now, to be sure, this is a liberation mantra. It will take one to mukti. But it has worldly applications as well. Some spiritual teachers give this mantra to couples who wish to have a divine child. I know of one such instance, and in fact spent several years living with this couple who had received such a mantra. It was a community that we lived in, a religious community of various religious persuasions. There were Hindus and Buddhists and Jews and Christians. We all lived together in perfect peace and perfect harmony. And this couple received a mantra because they wanted a divine child. And they were faithful and practiced it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And after a due course of time, why, the woman became pregnant and had a young son, Michael. Now, at this time, I'm teaching at the university, and I happen to run into famed anthropologist Colin Turnbull, who spent his time going around the world and living in various cultures, and then writing about them as anthropologists do. And as we met in the check cashing line and struck up a conversation, he informed me that the Mbuti hunt every day, this is a group of pygmies that live in Africa, by going to the youngest among them, who are still more in touch with their divine nature, and asking all of the children of the village under five to determine for the day in which direction they should hunt. Now, I thought this is interesting, because this exactly corresponds to the Vedic idea that when we are young, when we are babies, even before the age of five, we are more in contact with past lives and with our own divine nature. So fresh from my conversation with Colin Turnbull, I thought I would test these ideas in my own life. I would test the idea that a baby is in contact with its previous lives and its own divine nature. And I could do it with young baby Michael living in the very house where I dwelled. So that night as I came in the back door, the opportunity immediately presented itself. Here was young Michael sitting on the counter while his parents were preparing his food. And he was leaning back in his car seat and facing me as I entered the back door. I joined my palms in front of me and bowed forward from the waist and gave him the greeting of Namaste, salutations to the divinity within. Immediately, his eyes grew large, and there was joy on his face, and he stretched forth his tiny little hand and joined his thumb and forefinger, and then his three fingers came together, and he extended his arm in the gesture of wisdom, Jnana Mudra, perfectly performed by this tiny, tiny baby. I can tell you, the look on his face was not the look of an infant, but the look of a fully conscious being, and the hair on my body stood on end, and I had goosebumps in waves all over me. Immediately I began to speak to his parents, who were busily occupied, but you know how such things often are. They were flattered that I said nice things about their son, and when I tried to say, here, look, the moment was over. They had given the baby a bottle of formula, and he was busy sucking away and not interested in me or in anything else except that formula. But it was enough. I knew from my small experiment that it is true. These babies do remember their previous incarnation, and I concluded that in this case, the mantra that had been given them worked very well, for that ancient Jnana Mudra could only be given by one who is spiritually advanced and spiritually developed. So if you want to bring a divine child into your life, I can most highly recommend the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This great mantra has a variety of uses. The primary use, of course, is in making your identification with that great being of which we are all a part. In the name of the indweller, the Vasudeva aspect of Narayana. Bhagavate means in an embodiment. So essentially what you are saying when you say that mantra is, in my body, I want to have complete identification with that which has created this entire cosmos. And to that idea, I salute. Now, because that mantra takes you to that realm, it is also a wonderful mantra to use if you want to send spiritual energy to those who have passed on, you can sit with a picture in front of you or with the picture of the person who's passed on in your mind's eye. And in their behalf, you may chant this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You'll be helping them greatly. And you'll also be assisting the elimination of karma that you may have existing between you and that other person. Because all karma is unfinished business. And if by helping them, you can help conclude the business you have with that soul, you will be helping them and helping yourself to move on with your journey through many lives. The fifth avatar of Vishnu is called Vamana, the priestly dwarf. Again, we have a situation where the earth was in trouble. There was a king who had taken things under his control, and he had learned some of the secrets of magical powers and had used it to kind of control things on the earth. And Vamana, the priestly dwarf, after much drama, solved a problem for the king, and the king said, fine, ask for something you want, I'll be glad to give it to you. And so Vamana said, well, I just want a place I can retire to. I'd like as much land as I can cover by three of my strides. The king thought that was amusing because he's a dwarf. And he said, certainly. He didn't realize that this dwarf was none other than an embodied form of Narayana as an avatar of Vishnu. So his first step covered the entire earth. His second step, all of the heavens. And the third, he put on Bali's head and said, I would like this as the third place. So in three strides, he had covered not only the heaven and the earth, but the very person of the evil king Bali. And with that, he was dispatched, and Dharma, righteousness, was once again restored on the earth. There's a saying in the East, the world is a dog's tail. And what they mean by that is that you can straighten it out, but as soon as you let go, it curls back up again, as most dogs' tails are curled. So several thousand years pass where things are relatively under control. And then once again, we have a succession of evil kings who have taken up fiefdoms around the earth. And the sixth avatar of Vishnu is sent, Parashurama. Now, Parashurama has a job of destroying the evil kings one by one. So he's shown with an axe, and he travels over the earth, and one by one he conquers the armies and chops off the heads of the kings. And he is also teaching as he goes about the four tyrannies. And those tyrannies are rulership by kings or government that goes uncontrolled and oppresses the people. Rulership by merchants or the business class that goes uncontrolled and begins to take over the interests of the people. Rulership by the working class that goes uncontrolled and takes over the government to the detriment of the people. And fourth, rulership by the priests of the religion class that goes uncontrolled and begins to subvert the needs of the people. So as he's teaching these things and as he's chopping off heads, Parashurama finally arrives at the point where there is only one more king whose head must be chopped off. And the name of that king is Ravana, with his brother Kumbharnaka. Now, interestingly, these two demons are the next incarnation of Jaya and Vijaya. Remember in the story of Narasimha, we had demon Hiranyakeshipu and his younger brother. Well, here's their second incarnation, later, as Ravana and Kumbharnaka. So as Parashurama is on his way to defeat Ravana, he hears that there is a contest going on to string a bow that allegedly came from the great Lord of Consciousness, Shiva. And this interests him. So he stops his journey on the way to Ravana's kingdom and decides to go see what this contest is all about. As it turns out, the contest of stringing this bow is really for the hand of the princess Sita in marriage. And so we join Parashurama on his way as he comes up to the crowd. Unbeknownst to Parashurama, the next incarnation of an avatar has taken place. And this is unique among the 10 avatars of Vishnu, because usually they're separated by hundreds and more likely by thousands of years. But in this case, they are actually on the earth at the same time. Rama is going to take over the work of Parashurama and then do his own work. But Parashurama does not know that. In addition, Rama is interesting from a number of standpoints. Let's take a moment and talk about Rama and how Rama came to the earth. There was a king of India who had several wives and consorts. All of them wanted children. He wasn't quite sure how to go about selecting one that would bear his heir. And a celestial being appeared and said, "I can solve the problem." And he had a ball of divine substance. Took the ball of divine substance and broke it in two. One half he gave to a woman called Kausalya, and she swallowed it and became pregnant. The other half he broke in two and gave one of those halves to one woman and the other half to another woman. She, in her turn, shares it with her sister and takes her portion and splits it in half. So we have, in effect, four beings from this one ball of divine substance. All the women become pregnant, and from that issue are born Rama, his brother Lakshmana, and twins Bharata and Shatrughna. Now they share a consciousness, and we have a unique situation where one consciousness of an avatar in the form of that ball has been shared among four people. But they all know who they are, and they all know what their jobs are. So the children are born, and they grow up, and Rama is the heir apparent. Through court intrigue, he is moved out of his place of natural succession to the throne, and Bharata, one of his younger brothers of the twins, is appointed the regent to succeed him. Further through this same court intrigue, Rama is banished to the forest for 12 years. Now, Bharata knows perfectly well that Rama should be the king, and so he does a very clever thing. As Rama is about to leave, he says, "May I have, please, a pair of your sandals?" And Rama says, "Sure." And he gives Bharata his sandals. Bharata takes the sandals and places them on the throne where he was supposed to sit, and says, "Rama is the true ruler of this kingdom. Even though he may have been banished, still he is the ruler. I will be his regent, and I will manage the government. But Rama's sandals shall always remain upon the throne as a symbol of Rama being the ruler of this kingdom." So as Bharata places the sandals of Rama on the throne, Rama, his brother Lakshmana, and Rama's wife Sita go into the forest, where they will be banished for 12 years and kill some demons. And in the divine drama, this is really an opportunity for Rama to bless many people who are now living an agrarian kind of life. But before we continue the story, we have to tell you a bit about how Sita came to be Rama's wife. Rama hears, as a youth, that there is a beautiful princess who lives in a kingdom not far and is the daughter of a king named Janaka. And this princess is the ideal in every way, and there are many suitors that want her. So Janaka devises a contest whereby he will take a bow that was reputedly given by the emblem of consciousness, Lord Shiva himself, a bow that is so strong that only the greatest could string it. And he places it upon a flat rock and says, "Whosoever is able to string this bow shall have my daughter Sita as his bride." Rama hears about this. So he and Lakshmana go off to observe and participate in the contest. When they arrive, many people have tried to string the bow. Most holding it on one end, are not able to even move the thread an inch, so powerful is the bow. After everyone has tried, Rama says, "Well, Lakshmana, it must be my turn." And he strides to the rock upon which the bow has been placed. Quickly taking it down, he bends it to put the string on, and bends it so quickly and so forcibly that the bow cracks in two with a reverberating sound that thunders off into the distance.